the idea that, you know, you can open up the blood-brain barrier by utilizing focused ultrasound to enhance the efficacy of either chemotherapy or radiation or other agents, that is something that is, you know, incredibly exciting.
Welcome to Curing with Sound, a podcast presented by the Focus Ultrasound Foundation. I'm your host, Allison Preston Smith. The month of September marks the start of Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, dedicated to advocacy for more research and honoring the children and families affected by it. Childhood cancer is the leading cause of death by disease for children, and every year, an estimated 400,000 are diagnosed. Today, we're joined by Gavin and Wendy Lindberg of the Evan Foundation and Dina Sherwood of the Arms Wide Open Childhood Cancer Foundation. Both are providing support for children and families affected by childhood cancer and advocating for more research into less toxic treatments like focus ultrasound. Thank you all so much for joining the podcast to highlight such an important month.
Well, thank you, Allison. It's wonderful to be here.
Thanks for having us, Allison.
Thank you.
Gavin and Wendy, we'll start with you. Can you tell us about the Evan Foundation and about your mission?
Absolutely. Wendy and I established the Evan Foundation in memory of our son, who passed away from neuroblastoma, which is a pediatric cancer, at the age of 7 in 2010, after a 4-year battle that really defined courage. And Evan was our only child, and we've dedicated the rest of our lives to helping children like him and families like ours. And we do that through the Evan Foundation's core programs focused on patient and survivor wellness, research and advocacy and education. The Evan Foundation is based in Maryland, but our reach extends across the country and internationally as well.
And you have several programs as part of your organization. Can you talk about those programs?
I'll start with one of our original programs is the Treats and Treasures Carts program. And that is a program where a cart is rounded to every patient on the hematology oncology floor in hospitals that serve children with cancer. And we stuff it with all sorts of toys and activities and standard size candy bars and snacks. And we visit all these families. And basically, it's a simple program, but it's got a really big impact. So number one, it's a break from treatment. Just to take a little bit of a rest from all the medical stuff and be able to do something fun. It provides a moment of empowerment to the patient who's having all these decisions made for them. Now they get to make the decision about what they'd like. And it also provides positive anticipation to the patients and families. So the carts are rounded at the same time every week, and they get excited about the Treats and Treasures cart program and what day it comes on. Currently, the carts are in 23 hospitals, and that's in 3 countries. That's the United States, Canada, and the UK. And conservatively, it probably visits about 1,500 kids a week. And we're trying to expand the program and look forward to doing so. Another program that we have is the College Scholarship Program for Childhood Cancer Survivors. And in the past 3 years, we've awarded 9 $10,000 scholarships to patients and survivors of childhood cancer. And the applicants are from all over the country. And these kids are so incredibly inspirational, having achieved so much after or even during cancer treatment. And it's our pleasure and honor to support these kids who are showing the world that cancer is no match for the courage of survivors and the legacy of those we've lost.
That's amazing. And that's such an awesome impact to have, not only on the kids with the Treats and Treasures cart. And I'm sure it's so much fun to see how excited they get when they hear the cart coming down the hallway. But I was taking a look at some of the scholarship recipients, and it's so incredible to see how many of them are interested in going into the medical field and a lot in pediatric oncology.
That is so true, which just astounds us. That they want to dedicate their lives to that. And even if they don't, they always across the board want to make some sort of positive impact in the childhood cancer community. So that's amazing after all they've been through, and in some cases are still going through in active treatment, and then others might have long-term effects from treatment. But these kids are just a pleasure to speak with and learn from and about, and we look forward to doing every year.
Then maybe the final piece I'll add on our mission is, you know, research. This has been central to what we do since day one of the organization. And that maybe just highlight two particular institutions that we have supported for a long, long time. One is Children's National in D.C. There's a wonderful physician, scientist, surgeon named Dr. Tony Sandler, who is working on a really innovative neuroblastoma tumor vaccine at Children's National, which we've been supporting for a number of years. And then also we have a program at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia that supports early career investigators in the field of neuroblastoma. And that institution, CHOP, is one of the premier neuroblastoma research and clinical care institutions in the world. And our Evan Lindberg Neuroblastoma Research Scholar Program for 10 years now has supported a talented young investigator in that lab there in Philadelphia, really aimed at supporting the next generation of investigators who hopefully are going to find a cure for this terrible cancer.
Are there any patient stories that have stuck out to you, or any of the students who have become recipients of your scholarships?
Well, I'll share one. This was several years ago now. There was a young girl who loved the Treats and Treasures carts at Children's National in Washington, D.C. And she was really struggling. And we knocked on the door, and her dad opened up the door and said, you know, we're not doing very well today. And the little girl looked at us in bed and said, nope, I'm going to do this. And she slowly got out of bed, and with her dad's help, got behind a walker and walked ever so slowly and with great difficulty to the door to spend a few minutes with us and choose items from the carts. And as she was doing that, her dad was crying, looking at me and Wendy. And when she was finished and she turned around and she started to walk back towards her bed, her dad looked at us and said, that's, again, with tears in his eyes, he said, that's the first time she's been out of bed all week. And that was the last time we ever saw her.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so powerful, though.
Yeah, that was really a special moment. And there's also, I mean, we could think of countless times we've been at the hospital and the kids will like yell down the hall, Treats and Treasures, that sort of thing. And there's this one little boy that sticks out in my mind. He was way down the hall. You know, these hospitals, their halls are quite long. And he kind of did the pointing at his eyes, pointing at our eyes kind of thing with his hand, and let us know that, you know, he's watching us, anticipating our visit, and he's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting in a chair right outside of his door, right outside of his room, which was just adorable.
Oh, my gosh. That is adorable.
Yeah, I'll share one more really, really quickly. And this was just a couple weeks ago. There is a patient that we've seen, you know, week after week after week, just, you know, unfortunately, constantly in the hospital getting treatment. And things took a bit of a turn, and they ended up in the ICU, the PICU. And the patient reached out to some of the staff in the hospital and said, hey, you know, it's Wednesday, and I can't be up on the floor. Can you go and intercept the cart and make sure that, you know, I'm able to, you know, get something from the cart, and, you know, can you select a few things for me? So, and that's what happened. So the point of all that is, even when these kids are in the ICU, they think about this program and they know it's Wednesday, and they still want to be a part of it.
That's right. It's something to look forward to, you know.
And Dina, can you tell us more about the Arms Wide Open Childhood Cancer Foundation?
Sure. Our family started Arms Wide Open back when my son Billy was in treatment. He was diagnosed July 6, 2008. And shortly after diagnosis and learning, you know, his prognosis, at that time he was he had stage 4 high risk neuroblastoma, and his survival rate was about 30%. And we learned very quickly that there were not many treatment options, and the treatment options that were available were archaic, were brutal, and were the basic treatments that adults get, just tailored down to their little body sizes, you know, with a mathematical calculation. And, you know, we knew that there was not much out there for him. And so we started to raise funds for research. And that's how we started. You know, our initial drive was to fund less toxic treatment options for children fighting cancer. When we first began, we were just funding neuroblastoma research. Now we fund all childhood cancers, and we fund nationally. We have probably funded now over about 120 grants / clinical trials for research. Something else that's very, very important to us is family support. We fund families financially and emotionally. We have monthly family support. When we first started, we did one a month for probably the first 5 years. And then now we've grown so much, and there is so much need that, and we're blessed that our supporters have stuck with us all these years, that we're funding anywhere from 15 to 30 grants a month for families. In addition to the financial support, we have emotional support as well. That's very important to us. I always say that once a family is diagnosed with childhood cancer, because the whole family is diagnosed, right? No one in the family escapes it, even though it's your child that's diagnosed. Just recently, we started last year, a mental wellness initiative for childhood cancer fighters, survivors, siblings, and parents. And that's called Thrive. And that is supporting the community, basically, as we grow, you know, and as we move into the future past the diagnosis and past the NED, no evidence of disease status, there is still so much affecting the parents and the children who have endured a childhood cancer diagnosis. So we are so conscious of that, because we have been affected as a family of four, each one of us. Something in addition to that, we also do Hope and Healing bereavement retreats. And we've been doing those for about 10 years now, because we know, like Gavin and Wendy, we have many friends, more friends who have lost children than whose children have survived. We also have some other initiatives. One initiative that we started back in 2012 is the True 365. And through that initiative, it initially started as a documentary. And then we realized the power of it. And the power of it, I mean, the power of the voices of the children, and what giving these children and families a voice looked like. And it was life-changing for so many. So we continued that, and we do it up until today, you know, to give children, fighters, survivors, bereaved siblings, bereaved parents, the opportunity to share their voice and to share their stories, and to share it with, you know, the world on social media and, you know, through other means. And so that has been, I think, so impactful over the years. And then last but not least, we have a huge initiative and undertaking that we started 12 years ago, which is CureFest for Childhood Cancer. The whole premise behind CureFest was to unite the childhood cancer community and to serve the childhood cancer community and the families, you know, to amplify their voices, to get the attention, you know, of the legislators, and to really get the attention of the general public, to let them know that there is an issue. And I think that so much has changed in the past 12 years. And I'm just so thankful to be a part of the movement. You know, although I would have never chosen this route for my life, I am thankful because I get to help people every single day.
Yeah. You know, I would just add that, you know, Dina mentioned that, you know, she never would have chosen this life. And Wendy and I certainly feel the same way. But, you know, one of the blessings has been to meet Dina and her family and, you know, see and be a part of, you know, all the work to try to make life better for these kids and these families. And I know Wendy and I, just from the first day that we met Dina at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, that, you know, she was a powerhouse. And just like us, she was just incredibly frustrated with the status quo for kids like Billy and Evan, and wanted to do something about it. And we've been partners in crime in that effort ever since. So that's, my goodness, that's 16 years now.
Wow, that's fantastic. And how did you hear about Focused Ultrasound?
Yeah, so a few years ago now, Wendy and I were contacted by Emily Whipple, who, as you know, is the Director of Strategic Initiatives there at the foundation. And Emily was looking to forge partnerships and collaboration within the childhood cancer community. And yeah, we've had a great relationship with her and Lauren and the entire foundation ever since. And I think it was Wendy and me who introduced Dina to the foundation as well, if memory serves.
That's correct. And of course, you know, because of our strong bond and relationship and trust and love, you know, I immediately wanted to hear more. And being that from day one, literally day one from my son's diagnosis, my focus was on less toxic forms of therapy, this just spoke to my heart, you know.
I think Dina hit the nail on the head with her comments about reduced toxicity. You know, when you're watching your child endure treatment for high-risk neuroblastoma, what you're experiencing is essentially every toxic modality of cancer care that you can think of your child is receiving. It is one of the most, if not the most, brutal treatment regimens that any cancer patient, adult or pediatric, can endure. And it just makes you long for something that is less toxic and more effective. And I think, you know, focused ultrasound holds that promise, right? It's, you know, the idea that by just take brain cancer as one example, the idea that, you know, you can open up the blood-brain barrier by utilizing focused ultrasound to enhance the efficacy of either chemotherapy or radiation or other agents. That is something that is, you know, incredibly exciting. And I will say for Wendy and me, you know, one of the many, many challenges that we watched our son endure was multiple brain relapses. So neuroblastoma is not a brain tumor. It is a cancer of the sympathetic nervous system. But unfortunately, there are some patients like our son who relapse in the brain. And to watch your child endure CNS relapse neuroblastoma, again, it's just horrible. And the idea that we could be part of something advancing the field of, you know, treating children with malignancies in the brain and then a CNS is really, really exciting.
I agree. As I said, the thought that we could find something that is not toxic for these children, you know, I know that my son and many others suffer side effects from the toxicity. You know, we just were at his annual appointment and his hearing loss has progressed so much so that now he needs hearing aids, you know, and that's minimal. That's nothing to us, right? Hearing aids, it's like, okay, hearing aids, but it's something to a 17-year-old boy who already feels that he is not the same as everyone else because of his short stature or the scars on his body or, you know, multiple things that cancer has taken away from him. So as I said, and reiterating what Gavin said, I mean, that's what really, you know, opened my eyes and what really wanted, you know, what I made me want to learn more, because if this is the road that we can take and we can help these kids without this, the toxicity, without taking more from them that they've already lost as far as time and, you know, decision making and feeling in control, like, you know, this, it's just so important to me. It really is. I think there's probably nothing more important to me than to find treatments that are less toxic. So then when and if these children live, you know, they can not only survive, but they can thrive in life and as adults.
And we applaud the Focused Ultrasound Foundation for prioritizing kids. I think that's another thing that was really gratifying, you know, when we saw the work that your organization is supporting. You know, there's a focus on kids. There's a focus on kids with cancer. And how can we help these children who have these devastating, deadly, extremely rare conditions with focused ultrasound therapy? And you're investing in that. You're investing in them. And, you know, that's what we need. So I think that was another piece that was really attractive for both our organizations.
I would absolutely echo that. And I have to say, I got excited when I started hearing about focused ultrasound in kids for treatment, as a form of treatment, because it seems like it's proving to be so effective without all those side effects that these kids are just battered with every, practically every form of treatment that they get. So I'm really excited to see where the future leads in focus ultrasound, because I think it's such a game changer.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely exciting. There's so much hope there. And it's interesting. The National Cancer Institute reported that childhood cancer receives about 8% of the federal government's total funding for cancer research. So what do you hope to see for the future of funding childhood cancer research?
You know, we're at an incredibly, we're in an incredibly exciting time in cancer research and therapeutic development. Personalized medicines and cellular-based therapies hold great, great promise for less toxic and more targeted and more effective treatment for these kids who desperately need them. And, you know, we as a community, we need to make sure that the revolution in next-generation therapies prioritizes kids. Too often kids are left behind because of the rarity of pediatric cancer, and that needs to change. And everyone has a role to play in making that happen. The National Cancer Institute, industry, advocates, policymakers. We need to always keep in mind, Allison, as you mentioned at the top of the show, that cancer is the leading cause of death by disease among children. And it's not only the number of kids who die, which is simply devastating. It's also the number of years of life lost when one child dies. On average, that number is about 70 years of life lost per child that, you know, we lose to childhood cancer. And as we just were talking about, you know, for those kids who do survive their battle, the toxicity of the treatments they endure can lead to a lifetime of physical, emotional, and financial challenges. So, you know, a cure is not enough. We need cures with reduced toxicity that lead to better quality of life. And the amount of resources we invest as a society to improve outcomes for children, it needs to reflect the toll that childhood cancer takes not only on patients and families, but on society as a whole. Kids should be at the front of the line, not at the back of the line, when it comes to research, investment, and new treatments. And again, we need everybody to stand up, to speak up, to change the status quo, which unfortunately continues to be unacceptable.
I agree. And I think, you know, when we all started at this, Wendy and Gavin, right, it was 4%. So You know, yes, it has doubled from 4 to 8 in the last 16 years, but it is still unacceptable. You know, it's still unacceptable when a child survives, like my son, and then has restrictive lung disease and his lungs work at 58% capacity. When they are monitoring his kidney and liver, his kidneys and liver, you know, because his numbers are off, his bilirubin, I mean, you know, he's 17. It really is a grave injustice in society when parents like us have to work so hard to provide our children with options, right? We should be able to spend our time knowing that they are a priority and that we can enjoy every minute that we have with them, whether while they're in treatment and fighting or as survivors. You know, it should not be left up to us as parents to have to provide the funding. But the honest truth is that's exactly what we've been doing literally for the last 16 years.
That touches on a question I was going to ask is, what's something that other families who may not have experienced this personally, what would you want them to know? And it seems like the reality of going through these situations, you know, it's something you really don't find out until you're living it.
I think a lot of people are intimidated by childhood cancer, right? And I think a lot of people don't even know what to say. You know, I have lost relationships with my own family members because they just, they were so uncomfortable with it that they couldn't be around us. You know, it was too much for them to handle. So I would say, you know, for the general public, if you encounter someone who is going through childhood cancer treatment or a family, a friend, loved one, acquaintance, really, there's nothing more than you have to do except be kind and listen, maybe. You know, there really isn't, may not be the right word, but knowing that someone cares enough, you know, to extend an offer or an act of kindness, I think is enough for us, right? Any little thing that anyone has ever done for us on this journey when my son was in treatment, I can remember. I remember it all, you know? I remember the person who watched my daughter or picked her up from school. I remember the people that dropped off food. You know, I remember the people that ran out and got me toiletries when I was stuck in the hospital for 32 days, you know, or sent, you know, dinner or took my daughter to a fun outing just to get her mind off of it. You know, I remember every single person. You know, so you can show up and don't be intimidated.
That is so well said, Dina. And I will add that, you know, Wendy and I, just like you, remember every single act of kindness that was bestowed upon us in Evan during our time in treatment, every single one. And I think, you know, also to your point, people may not know how to act around families. They may feel uncomfortable. They may feel that, you know, this is really going to be a depressing situation, a depressing environment. I would say that almost universally, when you interact with a child with cancer and their mother and father and family, you don't come away depressed. Sure, there's some really difficult, you know, pieces to the story, but you come away inspired, humbled, motivated. It's a very positive experience to see, you know, how these families handle these challenges. And, you know, it's really a blessing to be a part of the journey that, that patients and families go through.
Such a powerful perspective. Thank you so much for sharing that. What are some other common misconceptions that seem to still hold true about childhood cancer?
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, that for many, there's this misperception out there in the public that we've solved this childhood cancer problem, right? Because there really has been dramatic progress in curing blood cancers in kids, leukemia. You know, it's one of the great success stories of modern medicine. You compare, you know, the prognosis for a child with leukemia, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago compared to now, and it's dramatic. But that comes at a cost, and we've talked about the cost, the toxicity, right? But there's a whole nother community in our childhood cancer space dealing with solid tumors like neuroblastoma, where there really hasn't been much progress, you know, to speak of over many, many decades. And it's going to take a united effort amongst all of us to make progress. And these kids deserve it. This should be a national priority. I'm going to get on my soapbox here, but this should be a national priority to solve the leading cause of death by disease among kids in the United States of America. The future of this country is kids, and we should be able to coalesce around making solving the leading killer of kids a priority in this country. And that is why Dina is every year gathering us for Cure Fest in Washington, D.C. And that is why Wendy and I and so many others in the community are continuously raising our voices on this topic, because these kids deserve it, these parents deserve it, and we're not going to stop until we've right. reached that goal.
And, you know, I think the reason why we come together at CureFest is to get the word out to the general public that childhood cancer research needs to be a national priority, right? That is one of the main reasons to raise awareness. And the survival rate has gone up at certain institutions, one being Memorial Sloan Kettering. It's gone from 30 to about 65%. But the reason why that has happened was because family-run foundations like our foundations have come together and collectively raised the funds to fully fund research projects at an institution. And had we not done that, it would still be status quo, I'm afraid to say. So we continue to fight, and we continue to work hard, and we continue to come together in unity.
Right. I totally agree with everything Gavin and Dina have covered. When I think about the impact of childhood cancer and the kind of information that's out there available to the public, it's usually survival rates, and they're not even always accurate, because survival rates are usually based on 5-year survival rates, and that really doesn't tell the whole story. So even though for kids like that are surviving blood cancers like leukemia, they may indeed survive 5 years, but that doesn't really tell the long-term picture of what's going on. And I think the public in general just kind of looks at those statistics and looks at the broader picture, because I've never had to deal with it up close and personally. So it's just something else to consider.
I'll just add briefly to that, that if you have survived a childhood cancer, you know, a high-risk childhood cancer, there is a 95% chance that by the time you are 45 years of age, you're going to have a significant, if not life-threatening, health complication from your treatment. It is almost guaranteed. And this, you know, just gets back to the theme that I think we were all hitting on earlier, that a cure is not enough, right? So we've got two tracks that we need to travel down and solve for. One is creating more cures for kids who, you know, don't have that opportunity currently to survive their diagnosis. And for those cancers that we are able to create long-lasting remission and cures for, we need to do it in a much less toxic fashion.
And Dina, how can the community support your foundation and get involved?
You know, of course, they can visit the website and they can see all the different things that we do. That's awoccf.org. I think that if the community wants to get involved, they could come visit us at CureFest and be a part of the movement. And they can go to curefestusa.org to register.
And Gavin and Wendy, how can the community support the work that you're doing?
Well, the community can always follow us on our website at theevanfoundation.org and on our social media through Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn at The Evan Foundation, and on X at Evan_Foundation. And of course, they can come to our events, learn more about the foundation. Any event we have, we'll always talk about the world of childhood cancer and what's necessary and how they can help?
I would encourage everyone listening to know that they have the power to make a difference, right? Every single individual has an opportunity to make a difference in the life of a child diagnosed with cancer, a survivor, parents who are bereaved. You know, we cannot tell you how impactful one person can be by expressing first their interest and second their support for what kids and families are going through.
Well, thank you all so much for sharing your own personal journeys and for sharing about your foundations and the important work you're doing. We're so grateful for all of your generosity and advocacy and just the huge impact that you are making in this field. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. It was so great.
This episode of Curing with Sound has been presented by the Focused Ultrasound Foundation. If you would like to learn more about Focused Ultrasound or the Foundation, visit our website at fussfoundation.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter and follow us on social media.